This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
I'm walking, hear the need, and I'm talking. But you and me, I'm hoping that you come back to me. I'm lonely as I can be. I'm waiting for your company. I'm hoping that you come back to me. What you gonna do when the well run dry? You gonna run away and hide? I'm gonna run right by your side. For you, pretty baby, I even die. I'm walking, yes indeed, I'm talking.
Oh yeah, Best Domino. Boy, he gets things going. The blood starts to flow. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with Big Ed Davis, my buddy and partner, thank you for joining us on this Friday morning, October 25th. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Tan Talk Radio, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, so please join us every time you can. We will be talking in a few minutes with Mark Miller. He is a senior attorney with the Pacific Legal Organization, and we're going to talk about the morality of capitalism and socialism. So do not go away. I think you're going to find it intriguing. And now, the shoe may be on the other foot. U.S. Attorney John Durham is now conducting a criminal probe of the Obama Justice Department in their hijinks during that 2016 election. We're going to talk about it with the proprietor of the only poll that really matters, the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceraci. Stay tuned for that. And in our latest edition of Campus Quackery, indeed, we spotlight the University of Pennsylvania, where some students did not take kindly to an address by a retired ICE director. Yes, indeedy. Stay tuned for that as well. And, you know, college basketball's on the horizon, believe it or not. Games start next month. So, in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10, we are going to spotlight the top 10 greatest college basketball coaches, and I think you might be surprised at who they rate number one. By the way, Freedom Works is sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop for the best haircut in Tampa Bay. You guys got to get over to Andrew's Master Barbershop. It's in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. State Road 580. You take that to Overcash Drive, go north, and just about a half a block on your left, there it is in the Overcash Plaza. Andrew's Master Barbershop. They even have a stoplight in the window. If it's red, they're busy. You're going to wait for a while. If it's yellow, come on in. Maybe one or two before you. If it's green, the coast is clear. Isn't that nice? Andrew's Master Barbershop. Also, please, if you want to listen to our show at any time, go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com. Big Ed has all of our shows lined up. Hit the podcast button. Listen to any show you want. You will know who the guest is. It's listed. You will know what the top 10 is. Ed puts that down there, too. And we're very grateful. Ourfreedomworks.com. Okay, well, maybe the shoe is now on the other foot. U.S. Attorney John Durham has announced, or is at least it has been announced, that his ongoing probe into the Justice Department and possible misconduct in the 2016 election now transitioned into a full-fledged criminal investigation. Criminal. That means you can set up a grand jury and people can go to jail for wrongdoing. One source says that the Inspector General, who is Michael Horowitz, has his report upcoming on the surveillance by the FBI of the Trump campaign. And that will supposedly shed light on why Durham's probe has turned criminal. So they're working together on that one. Horowitz has announced that his report is going to be available upcoming. They don't give us a specific date here. But it will be available to the public, and there will be very few blackouts on the report, very few redactions. So is the worm turned? Is the shoe on the other foot? What other cliche can I use? I can't think of any other. I think those two are good. Will it be the Democrats that are now running and screaming and hiding and jumping into bushes? It's been the Republicans for all this time, to the gleeful nodding of the press. Apparently, Rachel Maddow was all flustered, if you believe the story I was reading on Fox News website this morning about what John Durham is doing. Here's the thing about John Durham. John Durham has done investigations for both Republicans and Democrats. And the press can't go after him, as in he's, he's biased, because they know he's not. He's a straight arrow. Everybody agrees he's a straight arrow. So we're going to talk a little bit further about this with Andrew the Master Barber. But very interesting, very interesting. In the meantime, Hunter Biden not only was playing around in, in Ukraine and also in China, you know, following his dad around on the plane. And when his dad would get off the plane, say in the Ukraine, Hunter would scamper over and find some opportunity. Same thing in China. Apparently, they did the same thing in Romania. Hunter's been a busy guy. In the final year of the Obama administration, an American lawyer traveled to Romania to meet with a businessman accused of orchestrating a corrupt land deal. Now, the businessman was a wealthy Romanian real estate tycoon. The lawyer brought in to talk with him, Hunter Biden. At that time, Vice President Joe Biden's son. I mean, he's still his son, but Biden is not vice president right now. And his work for this guy went unreported at the time. But his involvement, Hunter Biden's involvement, along with Joe Biden as vice president and his involvement in Romania, were very much public. Joe Biden was among the leading voices pushing the government to crack down on corruption. So Hunter Biden is over there dealing with somebody involved in corruption for money. Says here, we don't know what Hunter was paid or what he was paid for, but it does raise questions of whether this Romanian individual, the real estate crook, was actually paying for a connection to the American vice president. Of course he was. What are you, nuts? Do you think Hunter Biden has some sort of Romanian talent? He had none. He had no Ukrainian talent either, and I don't think he spoke Mandarin Chinese. Yet he was making a pretty penny out of all of that. So when the president, in this case Trump, wants people to check into it, no matter who they are, why are they trying to impeach him? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense at all. Okay, let us take our break, because we're going to switch gears. Excuse me. We're going to talk about socialism. Is it moral? Capitalism. Is it moral?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
The Brian Cash Clause Radio Show. More business for your business every Thursday at 2. 106.1 FM, 1340 AM. Local business owners, listen up. We direct more customers through your doors with a printed coupon book and radio show. More business for your business. Call 727-600-4889. That's 727-600-4889.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Mother-in-law.
We're back on a Friday morning and delighted to have Mark Miller back with us. He is a senior attorney for the Pacific Legal Organization. And we're going to talk with Mark about the morality or lack thereof of socialism versus capitalism. Mark, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Thanks, Paul, for having me on. I always remember the last one I was on because you have the best bumper music by far. The idea that you said it to Ernie K. Doe's mother-in-law. I'm not
quite sure
what we're getting at there, but that's a great song.
I remember that song when I was in grade school. So that tells you how old I am. But
he was a hero in New Orleans.
It was very, very popular. We used to sing that song. Oh, did we have fun. Anyway, that is a very good reason to like our show, Mark. I'm proud of you. But let's turn to this thing. And I always get a kick and get excited about talking on the merits of socialism versus capitalism. And your great organization has a big thing going on its website about the morality of capitalism. I believe Larry Saltzman, the director of litigation there, penned it. And he says that socialism is popular again. And that's very true. It's kind of scary. But, I guess every some number of years it raises what I would call its ugly head and people start becoming enamored with it again. Generally, it takes a couple of generations and then it comes up again. And of course, those people don't remember what it had done or know what it had done in other countries. But you ask your organization asks, is socialism more moral than capitalism? Tell us a little bit about that question and whether or not there's really a good answer for it.
Well, I think there is a good answer for it, and I think Larry Saltzman, as you said, Director of Litigation of Pacific Legal, addresses it. And we actually have taken it on a question more generally in an entire magazine that your listeners can go to our website, pacificlegal.org/sword, and read. And I think now is a good time. As you said, every couple of generations, socialism kind of rears its ugly head. And I think right now we're at an inflection point where you have significant presidential candidates endorsing socialism. And it's incumbent upon us, as you said, among generations, our generation needs to let the younger generation know why socialism is immoral and a bad idea for the United States. So that's why Pacific Legal decided to get a little outside of our legal bailiwick and get into the economic bailiwick with this topic.
Yes. I once saw a panel discussion, I think it was, well, it was really a debate between the merits of socialism and capitalism, but I rarely see liberals and people that avow the socialistic ideas want to really debate with a capitalist. I think you find they tend to run away from it. And one of the things is socialism is based more on an emotional feeling, but not on a very practical or rational feeling. But it's great to hear a debate because then you force a socialist to sit down and try to explain how it works. And they cannot explain logically how it works. They cannot. They can say, well, we need to redistribute money because there are groups of people that are suffering, you know, and they'll use this kind of blanket plug on your heartstrings. But when it comes to the actual detail of doing it, it never makes any sense, right?
Well, that's exactly right. Nobody disagrees with the idea that we have a responsibility to our brother or to our sister. The question is, how do you address it? And so you can see why superficially the idea of socialism, the idea that we're going to take from those who are successful and give to those who are not, according to their need, as Marx would say, why that has some sort of superficial appeal. And you can also understand, and I like to concede this up front, why the younger generation would say capitalism's not perfect. And so they start casting about for other alternatives. There's no question. Capitalism's not perfect. No system is going to be perfect. No human system is going to be perfect. The question, though, is what's the best way or the better way among choices to address this responsibility for those who are lesser? And socialism has been proven not to work. Whether it's an idea, just generally, I should care for my brother, is a good idea. Socialism doesn't successfully address it. What happens instead is when you don't have private property rights, when we're all just going to reap the benefits, then no one takes care of the property. No one can successfully manage their own property to benefit others. And because we all have this supposed responsibility, and then no one cares for it. I like to tell stories, and so in this magazine on socialism versus capitalism that Larry wrote about, there's a story from an economist about visiting Cuba, and he stayed at a state-run hotel that had been owned for decades by the government, and it was in disrepair. It basically, as he describes it, sounds like a crack den. Then he describes how about 20 years ago, Cuba, amazingly, allowed some modest private property in terms of leasing out or renting out an apartment. And so he and another economist stayed not just at the government-owned decayed hotel, but also at a private casa, you know, a home. They rented out a room. And so the government allowed, in its infinite generosity, the socialist government, to private property owners to make a little money. And so guess what? That private property, that modest apartment and someone's home that was rented out, was in dramatically better shape. It was the kind of place you might stay in a bed and breakfast here in the state,
yeah,
or in a or a short-term rental, which, by the way, I love to make this point. It's incredible how many local governments want to eliminate short-term rentals. And then in Cuba, the Castro regime, or the post-Castro regime now, allows even this minor property right of short-term rental on your own property. But it's a great story. Government-run hotel, disaster. Private-run casa with a small apartment to rent out, very nice. And it tells the story of socialism versus capitalism in a very little neat anecdote.
We're talking with Mark Miller. He is the senior attorney for the Pacific Legal Organization. We're talking about the merits or lack thereof of socialism versus capitalism. And there is a piece on their website about the morality of capitalism. So, Mark, we've got Bernie Sanders. He's an avowed socialist. He's running for president. We got Elizabeth Warren. She's all but said she's a socialist. She doesn't want to be as open about it, but every single idea that she has economically is a redistribution idea, including Medicare for all. Of course, nobody will ever explain how it will work. I mean, even Bernie Sanders has been around for a coon's age. I never hear him explaining how anything like this would really work. Now, he will admit it's going to cost trillions of dollars, but he doesn't know how it's going to work anyway. And I don't know. Could you kind of talk a little bit about the reluctance of people that believe in socialism to actually comprehensively describe how the thing works?
Well, you remind me, Paul, of a couple of quotes. One from Reagan, that complex ideas, when you really think about them, are pretty simple. And Thatcher sort of exemplifies it when she talks about socialism. Margaret Thatcher, she said, sooner or later, you run out of other people's money.
Right.
And that's the problem with socialism. That's why you can't really explain it, other than the superficial idea that if we all share in the bounty, then we're all going to be better off. But in reality, you only share in this supposed bounty by taking from those who are creators. And you're taking from them who are not doing anything wrong. They're actually being successful and taking advantage of their skills. And you're taking from them effectively at the point of a gun. And that metaphor worries me these days when we're so worried about gun violence. But the point is, law enforcement, under the socialism structure, takes from you to give to those who need. And that's exactly what Marx said socialism was supposed to be. So I'm not misrepresenting it.
Yeah, you're not
as
talking about...
To,
go ahead.
So it's opposed to free markets, where I create, and if you like what I'm creating, then we exchange, you know, you pay me, or perhaps we exchange some sort of barter, but we... I trade with you. You trade with me freely. No one is forcing us to do that. No one's forcing me to just give you something. So it's not the government stepping in, and then I then can turn around and pay someone else to help me. And so there, as opposed to the pie being finite in the socialist structure, with capitalism, the money sort of expands, and then the pie expands, and there's multiple pies. And the proof is in the pudding. We can look at Venezuela, which is one of the should it be one of the wealthiest states in the Western Hemisphere.
They got all the oil.
Oil reserves.
Yeah, they got all the oil down there.
And instead, because they have a socialist government, nobody knows, you know, it's deeper in the weeds of economics, which is dangerous for a lawyer, but no one knows what the price of anything is. And so, for example, their oil is gas, basically free. People will exchange cigarettes for gas because the government doesn't basically gives it away. But no one's making any money. And so you have people who can't get toilet paper. They can get gas and for their car, but they don't have jobs. They can't, you know, they can't get toilet paper. They can't get food. And so the system can't be explained because it doesn't work, whether it be the USSR back generations ago, Venezuela now. And that's why capitalism, despite its faults, is much better than socialism, which is just a failed system.
Well, here's the thing, too, if I might mention this, incentive. And you can apply that to any industry. For instance, let's use healthcare because everybody's talking about Medicare for All, especially on the Democratic side, where the government really kind of takes control. And they will say, well, it's not really socialism because we will use private doctors and private hospitals and private well, but you're taking control and taking away their apparatus for making a buck. Actually, you're taking away their incentive. You're saying, okay, we're going to now, force you to adhere to these rules for practicing medicine. You're going to charge this much because we, the government, are going to actually take the bills and pay them directly to you. But in return for that, we're going to set up all these regulations and all these hoops you have to jump through. So the first thing I would think, if I was thinking about becoming a doctor, is why would I want to go into something where if I'm better than the next guy at doing it, I don't get paid more? Because ultimately, if I'm a great surgeon, or whatever I am, just great at doing it, and the other guy is not as good as me, and he gets paid just as much as me, where is my incentive? And if we don't have incentive, do we not... How do we get better? How do we innovate if there's no incentive to make a buck at the end of it? Now, that's individual. To me, that's individual. It's the idea of individuality. You work hard, you do well, you're going to do better than the guy that does not in a capitalistic system. But you won't do better in a socialistic system because they don't look at how good you are. They look at just getting everybody to get the same product. Is that, am I making any sense there?
Absolutely, and I'll bring you back. I think our healthcare system is so infinitely complex by way of mostly due to the government, moving the cost away from the individual to your employer, and it's sort of made the system a heck of a lot more complex to explain. And that I'm gonna take you back to that, my Cuban hotel.
Yeah, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there, Mark. You can't make me go in and check in. I'm sorry.
Well, but the state-owned hotel in Cuba sucks, but not because Cuba is poor. It sucks because no one cares. They don't have an incentive to care. If you work there, you have no incentive because it doesn't do you any good to clean it up, to fix it up.
Exactly.
As opposed to the individuals who have that apartment they can rent out.
Exactly.
They have an incentive to make it look good so people will pay, Westerners will come over and pay to stay there, and then they can make more money than their neighbor who doesn't work as hard. And there's your incentive that you were talking about.
Excuse me for interrupting, because we're getting towards the end here, but do you think Democrats really care? Do they care, or do they know? Do they know that socialism doesn't really work? Does Bernie Sanders really know that socialism doesn't work? How about Elizabeth Warren? Or are they so ignorant or so blind to it, they're espousing something they sincerely believe in? What do you think?
Well, let me speak to Elizabeth Warren, because I think that what she does is she reacts to some of the excesses, some of the errors, some of the problems in capitalism, but she solves them the wrong way. She should punish when she rails about people taking advantage, maybe with crony capitalism or corruption. What you do then is you go after those people. You don't say, well, capitalism doesn't work, because socialism is not the solution. That's really her error. Generally, I would say I like to think that everyone means well, that most Democrats mean well, they just are misled, which I would blame in part, and then they know they can get a lot of votes by advocating a system that young people particularly
I think you're being too kind, because
they haven't taught them well.
Yeah. I think you're being too kind. I think they know exactly. And you'll notice that socialists that run things are millionaires. And the ones under them are the ones that kowtow. So there you go. Listen, Mark, it's been great. We could talk for a day and a half about this, and I know you would keep it interesting. And I want to thank you so much for being with us, and I certainly look forward to having you with us again.
Of course. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Mark. Mark Miller of the Great Pacific Legal Organization. Let us take a break. When we come back, let us bring on the proprietor of the barber pole as we talk about a criminal probe for the Department of Justice.
Every night I hope and pray a dream lover will come my way.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Travel around the world and you'll never have to leave St. Pete at the 45th Annual International Folk Fair, October 25th through the 27th, with the Betty Fox Band performing Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Gates open Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at noon. Visit over 39 countries, watch parades, sample their food, and purchase gift items. Check out the Beer Garden on Saturday with bands performing on the main stage. Admission is just $10 for adults, $6 for students, and children under 6 are free. It's the 45th Annual International Folk Fair at the Vinoy Park in St. Pete, all presented by spiffs.org.
Hi there, I'm Dr. John.
And I'm Dr. Lisa.
Do you have medical questions you never get to ask?
Now you can ask us.
After many years of caring for children and families, we've learned that the best informed families are also the healthiest.
Are you saying knowledge is power, Dr. John?
I am, Dr. Lisa, and since you're the smart one, I hope you'll share some knowledge with me and our listeners.
Let's do this then.
Okay, we hope you'll join us every Monday at noon right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for the Drs. John and Lisa Show.
Listen online at tantalk1340.com.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Friday, and if it's a Friday morning on Freedom Works, it means that we have got Andrew the Master Barber with us. And Andrew, I am looking at the Tampa Bay Times here in their national section, and I do not see one word about the fact that U.S. Attorney John Durham has turned this investigation of the Obama FBI and Justice Department into a full-fledged criminal probe. Now, why wouldn't I be able to find something like that in the Tampa Bay Times?
You know, Paul, they just announced it about 10 o'clock last night, you know. And I don't know what time their presses roll.
Oh, I see what you mean. You don't think that they would be able to
news? You know, any good newspapers would stop the press with news like that, but not the Tampa Bay Times.
Well, here's the truth. The announcement actually came way before 10 p.m. It came while they were still able to go to press with the info. Because it was on.
They could have.
Yeah, it was actually something that they knew in the afternoon of yesterday.
Was it? Okay. I didn't hear about it till about 10 o'clock.
Hey, but who's quibbling? That's all right. You didn't hear about it, but it was still going on, you know.
But you know what, Paul?
What's that?
It's coming down, buddy.
Well,
it's coming down.
That was my point.
This is why they're all afraid.
That was my point. And they can't go after this guy, John Durham. He's a straight arrow. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. You know what else I just found out yesterday? I didn't realize this. But as long as there's an impeachment going on, that the senators cannot campaign for a re-election. Did you know that?
Well, they can campaign, I think, but they have to be back in time for a vote if they're doing any kind of...
I understood, no campaigning at all.
Why can't you campaign?
I have no idea. That's what I'm trying to find out.
I think you can.
Okay, well, I hope so, because, you know, they could put a damper on everything, too.
Yeah, no, they can campaign. Now, if the... House was in Senate voting on impeachment, of course. These people have to be back in their seats.
Paul, let's face the facts, Paul. As you said, the shoe on the other foot, I say the worm is turning.
Well, I use that. Yeah, well, I use that one, too. I use all the cliches. Go ahead.
The worm is turning, Paul. I told you this was going to happen. Remember, I told you 2 years ago. This is going to take time. There's been a lot of goofy things going on. Sessions, you know, he was a plant as far as I'm concerned.
Jeff Sessions.
And, you know, when this goes down, don't be surprised. You're going to see a quarter of the Republicans go down with it, Paul.
A quarter of the Republicans?
I'd say there's a quarter of rhinos still involved in there that had dirty laundry in their closet or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think you're going to see a lot of people go down, Paul.
Yeah.
I think this might put Hillary's reelection campaign in a little turmoil. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was surprised they had Tulsi Gabbard last night on Fox News on
Hannity. Yes, he was on that show at 8 o'clock, Tucker Carlson's program.
You know, she was on Hannity last night, too.
On Hannity as well? Okay. You're right. It was Hannity.
It was funny because, you know, he was trying to nail her what she thought about everything. She wouldn't answer nothing. Said, this is up to Biden. And at the end, Hannity was trying to cut her off. And she said, no, remember, you got to vote for me. And I was cracking up.
I don't blame her. You know what?
In
many ways, you look at Tulsi Gabbard and you go, okay, she served in the military. And
can't understand that.
And for like 16 years, she was in the
That's
military.
Right. That's
so,
right.
So nobody can question the fact that she's patriotic. Other than Hillary Clinton, who obviously thinks, you know, she probably went into the military so that she could get the goods and then send all this information over to Putin, maybe.
I ask all the clients that are coming in my shop right now if they got any ties to Russia, because I got to watch what I say.
You got to say it. Yeah, if they start speaking, when they start asking for a haircut and they accidentally start speaking in Russian.
I get very nervous. So Hillary's got me thinking about this all the time. But you know, Paul, they are running scared now.
Yeah.
Okay, they've got nothing on Trump. Look at Schiff the other day when they stormed his little store there, his little corner.
Well,
he ran off with his witness into the back room, hiding in the men's room, I guess.
Yes, I suppose. Yeah, it's a kind of a little trick, you know, and let's face it, the Republicans did that because they wanted to get the exposure. And, of course, then the media said they stormed in Nazi troopers.
Like a bunch of white boys.
A bunch of Nazi stormtroopers. That's kind of what they wanted the visits to be.
I know all over the news last night what they were saying, too.
Yeah.
And I forgot who was the one that was saying it, but... they're getting a little racial against the whites, what they're calling them now, which is not good either.
No, there's always the racial element that will be brought in no matter what. It's kind of scary, actually, that they keep bringing that up. But
that's right.
So you think that this is finally leading to an inevitable good conclusion?
I believe it's happening, Paul. And it's like I said, it's going to take its time right up until the election of 2020. You remember me saying that, didn't you?
Yep.
It's going to go in bits and pieces. They can't do it all at once because the American people forget.
Now,
if they were to come down on every one of them right now, Paul, by the time the election comes around, they're going to say, what are you talking about?
Yes,
you understand?
Indeed.
It's got to happen piece by piece, and then they got to slam the big ones just before the election.
I see. We're talking with Andrew the Master Barber. He carts with him his barber pole, which is a sense of what mainstream America really thinks what's going on in Washington. So, Andrew, Elizabeth Warren, your buddy, has opened up a seven-point lead, apparently, in the Democratic presidential primary, according to a Quinnipiac University poll, which was released yesterday. 28% of Democrats and independents who lean Democrat say they support Warren. That's 28%. 21% say they back your buddy Joe Biden. And 15% say they back the guy you really like, Bernie Sanders. So, is Biden all of a sudden, is he realizing that there's something going on? Is he, I know he's trying to shut up and hide his son, Hunter, but do you think it's over for him?
Oh, Paul, it was over when he started. I told you that.
Yes, you
did. He wasn't going anywhere. They don't want him. They've got the mod squad there controlling the Democrat Party now. Pelosi's not in charge no more.
No?
She's done. There's a mod squad there, the four of them. That's why it's so far leaning to the left.
Hey, I got a question for you. Yeah, I got to ask you, and this is kind of important. Does Nancy Pelosi wear false teeth, do you think?
Hey, come on. She rolls them around in her mouth. They fell out one time. On the video.
You are.
Of course she wears them.
What a horrible thing for
she
you
probably
to say.
Got false everything. She's 80-something years old, isn't
okay.
she? And she's still walking around. Who knows?
She is. Yeah, how does she stand up without falling forward? That's what I wonder. Well, anyway, so we got all of that going on. And let's see, we've got who else up? So let's see, we managed to skewer Bernie Sanders, and we got Elizabeth Warren. And how about Buttigieg? He's kind of come up a little bit. He's made some progress.
If the Democrats were smart, which I know they're not, their person should be Tulsi Gabbard.
I think you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
If they had half a brain, that's who they need to bring in.
Yeah.
She's got appeal. She's not hard to look at.
No.
She handles herself properly.
She does.
Can't help but she's got moron thoughts. Where they came from,
does.
Especially 16 years in the military, and she's still in the National Guard, you know.
Yes, she is.
She's still active National Guard. So I don't understand where she's getting, you know, all her stuff or all her ideas from. It just doesn't make sense.
Do you think she would pick up some military, a good percentage of military votes?
No, I don't think so, because you got to realize that 85% of the military supports Trump. 75% of the minority military backs Trump, okay?
Yeah.
All the police unions,
right.
All the police unions back there. They're not going to put somebody in there that, you know.
Well, then who's
she
going
to get? They don't like her thoughts.
Yeah,
would say she's an embarrassment to the armed services.
Okay, well then, who is Tulsi Gabbard going to attract then? I mean,
she might attract the middle of the road Democrats that are all leaning toward Trump.
So you think she might be a little less liberal?
No, I don't know for sure. You know, she comes across one way. You watch her talk. She gets your attention, Paul.
She does, but she backed Bernie Sanders, which of course goes back to why Hillary Clinton has been laying in the bushes for her for all this time. Bernie Sanders in the last presidential election that Hillary, of course, lost to Trump. But Bernie Sanders is so far left, and you know, admitted socialist.
Oh, yeah. He's communist.
All right, but Tulsi is so now. Maybe this is what provokes Hillary to say. That she is an asset for the Russians. Don't you think?
Of course. Listen,
okay.
She's going to be the one that's in Hillary's way.
So can you pick, do you think Biden's going to be the candidate that ultimately will survive?
No, he's gone.
Okay. Is it going to be Elizabeth Warren?
Nope.
Is it going to be Kamala Harris?
No, it's not. None of the above, Paul. Like I said, I think they might get smart because you see Tulsi and Hillary right now battling. Uh-huh. That's going to be one of those two, I believe.
Hillary or Tulsi?
One of those two.
So you think Hillary definitely is considering it then? That's not a joke.
Oh, yeah. No, no, she's considering it. That's right. But you got to see what happens with all these... You know,
is this like the Ali Frazier rematch? Is that what this is going
to
be?
I see. It could be, but you know what happened with that is Ali beat him again.
Well, no, Frazier won one of them. Oh gosh, yes.
I think he won the first one.
No, I think Muhammad beat him the first time, and then Frazier won the second one. How do I remember that?
Yep.
I don't remember for sure, but I think it was 2 out of 3 for Muhammad.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, like I said, I think you're going to see Tulsi Gabbard or Hillary Clinton, my friend. And Trump's going to beat either one of them, so we know that.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Andrew, it is always an energetic pleasure to have you on because you always bring some great thoughts. You have a great weekend, my friend.
Buddy.
Yeah, we'll be talking again, I think, on Halloween.
You got it, my friend.
And say hi to that new brunette down there.
I forgot to tell you. Yep, what? I got a new brunette working in the barber shop now.
Why didn't you tell me I'd come over?
The blonde quit. We got a brunette now, so we're all set. All except for new clients that like brunettes instead of blondes.
Okay. Well, now you got somebody for everybody. That's wonderful.
You got it. No, the blonde left. The blonde is gone.
You have Candy, don't you?
Well, yeah, but Candy's a brunette now. You see?
She's not
blonde no more.
Yeah, but do you have another brunette? Is that what you're saying?
No. We got Candy.
Oh, well, you got me all confused here.
That's good. We got you confused.
I'm going to blame Big Ed.
The normal state.
It's very easy to do, but I'm going to blame Big Ed for that. All right, then. Well, thank you anyway.
Take it easy, Paul.
All
be good.
Right. Bye-bye. Bye, Andrew. All right, there we go. We're going to take our break. My goodness. Ed, what are you trying to do to me here? I thought it's like they hired another woman, you know. So we'll take our break. When we come back, we're going to have a new edition of Campus Quackery.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Live in a condo or homeowners association? Do you have issues? How about questions? Tune in to the Ameritech Connection every Thursday at 5 p.m. on TAN Talk Radio Network. That's 1340 AM and 106.1 FM. Right, Sharon?
That's right, Mike. We cover it all when it comes to deed-restricted communities. We have the answers to all of your questions and more on the Ameritech Connection every Thursday at 5 p.m. on TAN Talk Radio Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM.
Hello out there. Tune in every Saturday at noon on TAN Talk for Connecting Caregivers with me, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers. Every Saturday at noon, we will find resources, education, and a shoulder for the caregivers. I know it's tough, but we can work it out together. Look forward to you tuning in on Saturdays at noon, where you'll have tons of information. Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hey, back for the final segment here on a Friday of Freedom Works. I am Paul Malloy, along with Big Ed Davis. Thank you very much for joining us. It is time, and we dust off Wilbur the Duck every once in a while because he enjoys our doing this segment. It is time for the latest edition of Campus Quackery. Thank you, Wilbur. That's enough, Wilbur. Thank you very much for coming back. The University of Pennsylvania is where Wilbur is now flying to because they have shut down an event there on immigration and detention and deportation after student protesters demonstrated against the guy. I think Wilbur is a little nuts. Okay, well, anyway, after student protesters demonstrated against a retired ICE director, Tom Homan, from showing up, they didn't want to hear him. Holman said that he had received a warning before he even got on the train to go to Philadelphia, where Penn University is, that there was a petition from over 500 students and alumni to cancel the event. The petition called for the university to ban all invitations to current or former ICE Customs and Border Patrol officials. Now, isn't that great? Isn't that great? God forbid you have a border official or a member of the ICE organization come and talk to you. Dozens of people, apparently from other universities, also signed the petition, including kids from Columbia, Cornell, Brown, MIT, Harvard. Holy Toledo, this is scary that you won't allow people like that to come and talk. Why can't you allow the guy to come and talk? You can have a discussion with him. Maybe he can take questions and answers after he's through with his presentation. No sense. All right. We can retire Wilbur until our next edition of Campus Quackery, Ed, because I want to talk with you about the World Series. Did you know that the last game of which, I guess, the Washington Nationals beat the Houston Astros 12-3? What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but did you know that it was the lowest-rated television World Series game of all time?
I have no desire to watch it whatsoever.
Well, see, now you're following with what most people must be thinking, because it says here, well, it's on Fox, and Wednesday night's game, which was Game 2, drew 11.9 million viewers, the smallest audience ever for a Game 2. So, nobody seems to care about this? Is that what's going on, or what?
So, Game 2 was, what, last night? Not last night, but the night before,
night
right?
Night before last, yes.
So, it was on Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Trying to think what it went up against.
Was it Roseanne's new show?
I don't think they did. In fact, you know, a lot of the networks will not put out a new episode of
right.
one of their shows thinking that people are going to watch the World Series.
You are right.
You know, the
you
same thing
right
with you know, men's basketball and, you know, the Final Four. You know,
when it's a tournament or something. Yeah.
They won't show Super Bowl. Whatever.
Well, they must have made a big mistake by not rolling out their new show, because hardly anybody was watching the World Series.
That. They can't.
They can't project it. So, okay, let's get to the game itself. This is a surprise, is it not? Isn't Houston the team that is favored?
Well, says it right there the other night. 12-3. Everybody thought pitching was going to be on Houston's
side. Well, it is,
side,
but it's on
not
the
if
other...
you give up 12 runs.
No. I'm saying it is, but yeah, it's on Washington's.
Everybody's
side.
Thinking, you know, Verlander and the other guy, I forget his name, but they figured that was going to be the great rotation there in the Houston pitching. But, you know, I think the Rays showed a few cracks in Houston, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, you're probably
you know,
right.
I think the Rays would have
maybe they
probably if you know, if they got past Houston, I think they would have beat the Yankees.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. I do.
Now that would have been a real amazing run. So what about that guy that went to Las Vegas and bet about $3.5 million that Houston would win it all? Is he kind of worried right now, do you think?
I would be shaking in my boots.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can come back from that. I really don't.
It's very rare.
Yeah,
I mean, looking at the statistics.
When you lose by one run, you know, there's hope.
It's
not
like
12-3.
The last eight, it's like this, and this is not exact, but the last 18 games where one team took a 2-0 lead, that team won 17 of the 18 World Series.
Right. Yeah.
That's how rare it would be.
That's really hard. So they have to win two more games. I don't think they'll win both of them in Washington. Actually, it's 2-3-2, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so the next three
are in Washington, yes. Who do you think?
Yeah, they might win it at home. They might. I think they.
The Nationals.
I think it's going to go five games.
Wouldn't that be a shock?
Yeah,
that would be a real shock.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have another team in there. You know, it's over. You know, Houston won already.
Right.
You know, and the Yankees are over there.
Absolutely.
But.
No, you're right about that. Very true. Okay, let's switch sports, Ed, for our top 10, because Did you know that basketball is just around the corner? It starts next month. And so, therefore, we have assembled what is considered to be the top 10 greatest college basketball coaches. It comes from a source called New Arena, and we will ask Ed, when we get to it, what he thinks is number one coach. All righty, here we go. Without further ado, number 10, Denny Crum of Louisville. Do you remember that name?
No.
Oh, he was good. He won two national championships. He had 675 wins under his belt.
What year?
He was back in the 80s, like in the early 80s. Early to mid-80s, Denny Crum. Mm. Okay. Number 9. I know you know him because he's still there. Tom Izzo, Michigan State.
Right, yeah.
He's number 9. He's been in 7 Final Fours, 1 national championship. Pretty good. Number 8. Now, this guy's no longer there at this university, but he's still coaching. Jim Calhoun of Connecticut at the time. Mm. 3 national championships, close to 900 wins. Pretty good, huh? Number 7. And he's still there. Jim Boeheim, Syracuse University. Mm-hmm. You know him, right? He's the second all-time winning coach. He's had 5 Final Fours, and interestingly, only 1 championship. Number 6. Another guy that's still coaching. Roy Williams. Roy Williams is now the coach of North Carolina. He was the coach of Kansas, and he's had 3 national championships. Number 5. Now, you won't know him, and I didn't even know him, but I read about him. He was called the man in the brown suit, Adolph Rupp.
Adolph?
Yeah, it was back. He was born before Adolph was Adolph, okay?
Oh, okay.
So Adolph, before Adolph was Adolph, the name Adolph was okay. Adolph Rupp. Back in the 50s and 40s, he won 4 national championships for Kentucky. Number 4. Do you remember the name Dean Smith?
No.
You're kidding. Mm. Dean Smith, North Carolina. 2 national championships. He had 879 victories. Uh-huh. Unbelievable. Number 3. I know you know this guy, Bobby Knight.
Yeah, I was thinking he would be in the top 3.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's number 3. 3 national championships. Did you know he won over 900 games?
Wow.
What's he doing these days?
Throwing chairs somewhere else.
He is. All right, here we go. Number 2, John Wooden, UCLA. 10 national championships, 7 in a row. Now, why he's not number 1, I will never know. I will never know, because I would have made him number 1, and I think most polls would. But New Arena did not, so he's relegated to 2nd. All right, Ed. Who do you think is the number 1 greatest college basketball coach?
What's his name? Rick Pitino? Or Coach K? One or the other. We'll go with Rick Pitino.
The number 1 college coach is... Not Rick Pitino.
No.
Coach K, Mike.
Ah, well, that was Krzyzewski. My second choice.
Yes. Mike Krzyzewski. Did you know he's been in 12 Final Fours and 5 championships?
Mm.
And he is rated the number 1 coach, and he's still coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, right? He was a protege of Bobby Knight, by the way.
Mm.
Yeah. All right, friends, thank you so very much for being with us. Have a wonderful weekend. Freedom Works will be back on Monday, 10 to 11 a.m. Bye for now.